Welcome back to another episode of the Front Page Football Podcast. We are back again. On Monday, it was just myself going through the A-League action. Today, I've got two guests. First, I'm joined by Jake Holub, FPF writer based in Melbourne. And we are going to talk about a crazy result in the A-League men last night, where Melbourne City absolutely destroyed and took the soul of the Wanderers 7-0. In what was a massive six-pointer, and then we're going to talk a little bit about the Socceroos squad, which should be announced, in the coming days. So first, let's talk about this. First, actually, Jake, how are you going on this? It is very early in the morning on a Wednesday. How are you finding the early morning pod as opposed to the late night pod?
Look, it's very contrasting, like you said. We've gone from very late to very early, so it's sort of getting used to it right now. But look, I'm always happy to chat about the A-League, so you can catch me at any time, and I will be spewing my stuff, so I'm happy.
All right, let's start with this game. 7-0. So I said on Monday that, like, it was Groundhog Day for the Wanderers, and if that was Groundhog Day, like, I don't know what you call today. Like, it's just a fucking disaster down there, right? You've got a coach who's just behavior is constantly erratic, and we'll get to some of that from last night soon. You've got a team which has suddenly learnt how to concede goals instead of how to keep them out. It's supposed to be good defensively, but there was something. I was listening to the A-League Off Air pod with Robbie Thompson and Daniel McBreen, their latest one with John Cosmina, and I think it was Robbie Thompson who mentioned something like the Wanderers had conceded 14-14 to start the season, and then, like, in the last, like, six games, it'd now be more. Actually, let me get this up, because it's something ridiculous. Like, they've basically conceded more in the last six, seven games than they did in the first, like, 14.
Well, even the past three games, they've let in 14 goals, which is pretty incredible, you know. And even, you know, three of those to Western United, for example, a team that's struggled to score goals.
Yeah, so you got seven against City, three against Western, so then 14. I mean, Jesus Christ, they've conceded 17 goals in their last five games, you know. 20 in their last six. 24 in their last seven. Yeah, okay, that's the, you know, like, 24 in their last seven games after conceding 14-14. Yeah, that's the, like, that is actually insane when you think about that, right? So the game itself, it looked like you were able to catch the full game. I was actually not able to catch the full game, but I've been able to catch up on it this morning before we recorded. And it looked to me like City kind of started strong, but even the Wanderers had a couple chances at the beginning, and then basically once that first goal got in, there's kind of no turning back. And, like, just all the goals themselves, because I've just watched them before, and then things just stuck out to me. So, I mean, like, the first goal, you know, like, Arsenal's the only guy in the box when that ball's in a wide area. Like, maybe Mark the only guy who's in the box, like, you know what I mean? So there's that. The second goal, in the build-up to it, like, Schick Luna, who came in for Jack Lisby, was dropped. He came in. And I'll be honest, I haven't been impressed very much by him. I know he's still a young player and stuff, but when I've seen him, he hasn't impressed me the most. And he just, like, ridiculously gives the ball away in midfield. I don't know who he was trying to find. And then all of a sudden, you're now turning back and facing your goal and going the other way. And leads to a lovely finish by Tolga Arslan, who I think we'll probably talk about in a moment. Third goal, Caputo, actually, you know, who I think we like, and has definitely kind of made his mark as more of a target sort of man, and more of an aerial presence, but he showed an ability that actually get him behind. And Marin Yakalis, probably one of his better games in a City shirt as well. A great little ball, great cutback, and Leonatel, he can finish when he is 2 yards out in front of an open net. And then fourth one, which was the Caputo finish, lovely finish. But but also, so Yakalis kind of, it seems like it's a poor touch.
Yeah.
And the ball bounces almost like twice in the box before we even see any Wanderers defender anywhere near anything. So don't know what's going on there. Fifth goal, the Wanderers, you wouldn't expect, you know, Rudin would be furious that they conceded from a set piece. After actually starting the second half a little bit better from what I saw, and having a couple little half chances. I mean, you'd expect them to show a reaction after being 4-0 down at half time. So conceded from a set piece. Actually, Nuno Reis's first A-League goal, I think. They said in the commentary, yeah. So that's interesting. And the sixth one, I mean, you know, we know Jamie McLaren hasn't had the best season and stuff, but I mean, it's still Jamie McLaren. Like, maybe get a little bit tighter to him in the box, you know, instead of letting him have like basically 2 meter radius around him of space when he's 8 yards out. And then, I mean, the final goal. There's not
Speaks for
really much.
itself.
Yeah, it's probably the only one where you can say there's not really anything you can do there. Just quickly on that from Terry Antonis, who. I don't know. Am I getting to the point where I'm close to writing a formal apology to Terry Antonis? I don't. It might have to.
Well, he's been elite, especially at least in terms of goal scoring. Like 5 goals from, someone that's, playing midfield. It's pretty unbelievable. And a lot of them have just been absolute bangers. Like looking here, three out of the five he scored have been outside the box, which is pretty insane. Like, and he's only taken 6 shots outside the box, scored half of them. That is unbelievable, to
That's
be
insane.
fair. Wow. So yeah, Terry Antonis, I think he's someone's gone under the radar. Probably because he doesn't really start, but I think he's been a really good pickup for them. He's proved it all season, to be fair. So yeah, I think he's owed something from you, Christian. I'm
I
not gonna
know,
lie.
because I came flaming in and was like, you know, like, what is this signing? Like, there's no need. I don't think he can play in his advanced midfielder, blah, blah, blah. And then I don't know whether they've like taken the clip from the podcast and Terry like plays it to himself before every single game. It's like a fuck you.
Just to jinx himself up. I'm
But
gonna prove this man wrong.
I know, but no, look, he's been better than I expected for sure. And I mean that goal, it wasn't just I mean, it's an unbelievable finish, obviously, but he actually dinked the ball over Priestman before that, right? Like, he actually there was skill involved in that, and then obviously volleying it. I mean, it's insane, as well. So yeah, now question for you, with the Wanderers. So Marcelo didn't play; he was out with the yellow card suspension. Like, how much do you chalk this up to? Okay, no Marcelo, basically no Wanderers defense, no Wanderers defense. But then also, we just mentioned they've conceded 24 in their last seven, so this can't just be a Marcelo only issue. Like, what are you seeing with them as to why they are just such a disaster defensively?
Well, I would, first say that, because I think a lot of people will probably immediately point to Marcelo, be like, hey, obviously I think a couple of those goals, if Marcelo's there, realistically, I don't think they let them in. I just think he has so much just presence and authority to the back line, at least to not let it get to seven. That's when it's like, okay, there's a bit of a problem going on here. But it's really tough to pinpoint. I think from all accounts, it seems back room sort of at the moment, Western Sydney, it's a little bit off at the moment. Maybe the players aren't happy with the coach and whatnot. So I think there's some of that's probably playing in parts of it too. Just seems there's a bit of turmoil going on at the club. And some of the decisions have been a little strange. Now, like for example, one you put up was Dylan Scicluna, who I think is a really good player, very talented. He's played at, Wolves' academy for, basically his whole career. But the thing there was he's a midfielder. He's like an out-and-out midfielder.
Right,
And he's
yeah.
being sort of shifted out to play at left back, which, I think he's played a couple good games. I remember he played against Central Coast and had a really good game there, was one of the best players. I think he was actually, there was a right back there because he's right-footed. So it
Yeah.
just seems a bit strange to put him, there. Like
Like
obviously Jack
it's a
Quinsby.
Popovich move, isn't it? It's like,
Yeah,
let me
it's a
Yeah,
really strange
let me put
move.
Jason Gerry at left back and
Yeah, it's
completely
and
fuck
when
off
you
Christian.
have,
Anyway, yeah.
look, Jack Quinsby, I don't necessarily think he's the best left back in the world, but he's someone that's played there his whole career. And I think to drop him, almost inexplicably. Like I don't think he played poorly the last game. It was a bit of a weird decision. And ultimately, and even that kind of goes into another thing. Obviously, we saw Clisby as well as four others come on at half time, which I think just like wow. Like I'm trying to think of another time
Yeah,
where that's
so
ever happened in history,
well,
and just all five subs used.
against Adelaide, when Wellington played Adelaide a couple of weeks ago, I think Giancarlo Italiano made four subs at once, in that game. But that was more of like a we need fresh legs, it's one all, like make the changes to go and kind of win the game. Interesting because John Paul Dimaragni, and we'll get to why he was at the press conference and not Marco Ridden in a second, but he was asked about it towards the end of the press conference, and he said like it was tactical. And but he also said like it was about making sure players have an opportunity to be selected next game. I mean, it's total bullshit, right? Like, you know, like obviously it was, you know, Rudin's pissed and, you know, I'm just gonna change half the team and see, basically throw shit at the wall and see what happens. But like it kind of just gets just with Rudin, like so the five changes, the not showing up to a press conference, the rants from weeks ago, which kind of since then is where this is totally capitulated. Like there's this kind of just erratic behavior from your coach where you're just not gonna know like what's he gonna, you know, what's he gonna do? Like am I is my spot completely secure now? Like a lot of these players now going into next game are gonna think like, holy shit, how many changes is he gonna make? Like, you know, it's something's not right there. And I was listening, yeah, I mentioned this on Monday too, because I listened to the RBTV guys, their review of the Western United game just to get the fan perspective, and they mentioned on there that they feel maybe they'd heard or something about like yeah, like basically dressing room issues, and things like that, and maybe has Rudin lost his players, and you know, if that's the case, like it kind of speaks to how acting like the world's against you. And there's a siege mentality and this, that, and the other. Like, it just, I just don't think it works with this day and age and with this type of player. Definitely if you don't have the results at the moment to back it up. And yeah, I mean, now it's interesting. They've got to go to Perth, on the weekend. That's not an easy game at all off the back of a 7-0. You got to travel as well. The other part of this was, you know, they did, I know, like, in the press conference, Dim Ranya was asked, I think by Joey Lynch, he was asked that, you know, like you had to travel and stuff like that. But they did have an extra day rest, the Melbourne City. And if you remember watching that Melbourne City Wellington game, I mentioned on Monday, like Melbourne City were done after that game. Everyone was like on the ground. Like that was a big shift. You know, you're beating the best team. Well, you know, based on ladder, the best team in the competition. And to come in like that and just get totally overwhelmed by them was pretty disgraceful. But the other part of this with Rudin is so he doesn't turn up to the post-match press conference. Jean-Paul Dimarani is kind of getting heckled about it, and like rightly so. You know, like you can have no complaints really about that. Like your team just lost 7-0. 7-0. That is when you are required to face the music more than any other time, right? Like your fans, your players need to see you there, like and kind of sticking it out and facing the music. Because if I was a Wanderers fan and I see my coach basically running away as soon as when he gets his worst result ever, like what the hell? You know what I mean? Like that's kind of there's no accountability. I've said this with Rudin before. When we go back to those the MacArthur rant and the Newcastle rant about, you know, referees and stuff, there's again no accountability about we said at the time, I think Antonis and I, this was the pod like a month ago, and we said, like, how about you take accountability for the fact that your team has conceded like 7 goals over those 2 games? And here we are, like 5 weeks later, and they've conceded 24-7, right? Like, there's what is going on behind the scenes there in terms of other players just constantly getting blamed for what's going on. And, like, if that's the case, if I'm a player, I'm probably going, like, well, you know, yeah, I, you know, my performance needs to be better. But particularly some of these younger boys, probably thinking, like, maybe I need more tools to kind of help me, you know, in these games, because like this, the floodgates are opening. I mean, and Perth, I don't know if they're still the highest scorers in the league. Maybe Melbourne City are, to be fair, after, you know, now they've been Brisbane 8-1 and now Western Sydney at 7-0. But like Perth are, you know, pretty good at home when it comes to goal scoring. So I'm gonna say that Wanderers are not gonna keep a clean sheet in that game. That would be my one prediction
Bold,
for that
bold
one.
statement.
Yeah, but I mean, what are you seeing with this kind of Rudin behavior and like, do you actually see this turning around for them?
It's a very tough spot because not only has this been happening, but I think people forget like Marco Rudan literally just signed a 3-year extension with the club not that long ago. And
Yikes. Yeah.
most sane people, shall we say, will be like, whoa, okay, this is a bit, wow. Because look, okay. Western Sydney before this, we're having a relatively good season. I think we're pushing sort of, at least at the top sort of spots of the league. However, there were definitely cracks. It definitely looked a little shaky at times. So it did seem a bit premature, I guess to say the least, to sort of go in for a 3-year contract extension. And maybe now this is where they're like, oh crap, we stuffed up. Because, from reports that, I think I saw an Aussie scout tweet that got deleted almost immediately where he said that, hey, Western Sydney are looking elsewhere, looking at Popovich, and I forgot one other coach. And I think he deleted it straight after. But so that's a bit interesting there. I don't know what's going on there, but it's by all accounts, it does seem that there's definitely some issues going on with Marco Rodan, and I think we've talked about it before. It's sort of some of the rhetoric he uses to sort of garner his players to fight for him or whatnot. But it's just it's very divisive. Let's just say that the tactics he sort of does use, and I guess ultimately maybe for a close game here and there where a penalty decision or a red card or whatever it is. Maybe you can sort of justify that a little bit easier, but when you're, getting thumped here, like 7-0, and even in the past games against West United, there was no excuses there. They were just straight up beaten by West United at home, and even the derby. It's just, look, I it's not looking good. Look, I think Mark Rodan is still a solid coach, and he has proven that before. But I think ultimately, when you lose the dressing room, that's a whole other question, and it's. That this it's always tough to win it back, especially with the type of coach he is. He's someone that's very hard nosed, he's way on the highway type of coach. So yeah, I personally I really don't know. I probably would lean towards he doesn't sort of win it back, and potentially I don't know if he necessarily is gone by the end of the season, but I don't know, because ultimately, if Western Sydney want to make the finals, they have to do something quick because, look, they've lost their spot now. They're behind Melbourne City, and Melbourne City are sort of on an upward trajectory at the moment. They're looking better. Western Sydney are the complete opposite. They've even got, for example, Brisbane Roar behind them that have been playing all right too. So there's a very solid chance that Western Sydney's like almost unbelievably, going from one of the top teams in the league all season to, these past whatever, how many games, just, stuffing up and just choking there. They're almost unbelievable sort of was position they had to a Melbourne City team that have been really disappointing all season. But I don't know. Wow. It's just I personally I did see a bit of capitulation from them, but not to this extent. So this has
Yeah, no,
been
I never expect them to lose a
unbelievable.
game 7-0. No, no,
Yeah,
no way.
like that's something I always said about a Western Sydney team that won't happen to them. They're too solid. They're too just I don't know, like too much of a force, but I think, once you start seeing those 7-0s, because they don't happen every day, this is tied the largest lead ever lost in the league. I think that kind of shows. So yeah, I'll be very interested to sort of watch around and see what's going to be happening over this sort of next couple of weeks or so.
Yeah. And now the other thing about that Perth game is Perth still have a very outside chance of like snagging sixth. I mean, I kind of agree with you. I don't know what's going on in Melbourne City. Maybe they've turned some sort of corner. I'm not sure. I'm not really there yet. But if they have, then that kind of might lock in the sixth, to be honest with you. And I know, yeah, you're right. Brisbane actually have been playing better, and who knows? But Perth will be coming in all guns blazing for that game because they'll see like we have to win basically. So it's gonna be very interesting. Couple of things with City quickly. Jay McLaren benched again, and okay, he got his goal, and that's good for him. And who knows? Maybe this means maybe next game he could start. But I mean, how can you really drop Max Caputo, who's been excellent these last two games? I thought he was excellent against Wellington. And then, it's a great finish last night as well. So this situation is very interesting. I think, like, has it almost, if McLaren's been causing problems in the squad kind of behind the scenes with his contract situation and stuff, has dropping him almost kind of sent a positive message in a way to the squad to say, like, if there are other players maybe annoyed with him, maybe in his behavior, if there are issues with the squad behind the scenes, and maybe Vidmar's gone, okay, if I drop this guy for a couple of games, maybe the squad's going to feel like, that's a good thing, and maybe they'll react positively to that. I don't know, but I mean, clearly that if that was the case, that's worked because they've looked probably two of their better performances of the season, these last two games, in different types of performances as well. And the other thing is, Tolgay Arslan came back from his suspension against it was his first game back was against MacArthur, was that 2-0 loss away. But since then we've had these two performances. Like, he's kind of just injecting him back in the starting 11. We know Tilio now is basically, if he could be fit for finals, probably at this point. And then Lecky is, hopefully maybe back for the next game. He's kind of on a game-to-game basis. But now I guess we got five games left, and now maybe we're going to see the best of this City team as it was built, you know?
Yeah, that's sort of my thinking there. It just seems like everything has sort of finally sort of came, to fruition for them. They've had this, sort of period where, for example, Lecky was back playing, Tilio was back, and then all of a sudden Arslan's out suspended. There was just no way for them to really build sort of consistent chemistry and, I guess sort of a working sort of team because everyone was always coming in and out consistently. So I think that's good to see for them, especially just Tolgay Arslan being in the lead playing again. It's an absolute pleasure to watch. Just unbelievable performance for him. Obviously, I think I tweeted it like, look, the defending was terrible for especially the first goal. But look, Tolgay Arslan just has so much quality. And I think ultimately, if you just give him the yard of space or just, don't defend him properly, he's going to kill you. And that's what happened. So he was great. And Max Caputo, I really want to talk about because, I really think he's added a lot to this team. Obviously, with Jamie McLaren, we've probably seen over recent years, he's just maybe lost a bit of that mobility, the ability to make runs and just sort of get involved. Like, there's been multiple games this season where his only touches have been kickoffs, like he just struggled to really get involved with games. Simply enough. But I think Max Caputo has shown a little bit more ability to link up, get a little bit more involved, make some runs. Obviously, he's a bit younger, but he's got really good size to him. So yeah, I think very, very exciting for him. And I think it's ultimately especially if the rumors about Jamie McLaren are to be to believe that he might be heading off, to Auckland or wherever it is, this is a perfect audition for Max Caputo for not only the season to keep his spot, but I'm thinking ahead to next season because
Definitely, yeah.
if he has, I'm thinking like to Noah Bottich, for example, for last season, who got the chance, was scoring goals consistently, and then Wesley like, you know what? Yeah, let's give him the chance. This is Max Caputo's chance now. Obviously he's very young, only nine, or well, I think he'll be 19 by the end of the season at least, which is unbelievable. He's so young. But yeah, I think this will be a really good chance for him to, try to keep a spot, prove, yeah, I'm ready to start next season, if McLaren is off. So I know, it's very exciting. He's a very, very, very good player.
Yeah, and I saw this stat here as well. Melbourne City has scored 37 goals this season, and 15 of them have come in two games, which was yeah, against the
Atrocious.
Roar and last night. So yeah, very, very strange Melbourne City season is kind of the way to sum it up. Okay, a couple of things first before I let you go. Socceroos squad is expected to be announced, I believe, probably later this week, maybe tomorrow, maybe Friday. We'll see. For the Lebanon qualifier. A couple of things. So, as is Bayich is injured, so we won't expect to see him in the squad. And I also wanted to float the idea of someone, Tete Yenge, who's been performing really well for Livingston in Scotland. How far off did you think he would be from any sort of Socceroos call up? And then also, we saw Arnie was obviously watching Taggart at the weekend, and Stammer probably as well. Apostolos Stamatolopoulos, the full name, at Newcastle. So there's a bit of a striker situation there too. And then with Bayich out, who have you got kind of in mind as I guess, because obviously Jordan Boss will be in there. Jordan Boss, by the way, I think you saw the goal that he scored recently in
Unbelievable.
Belgium. I mean, this guy. And so left back option there, and then striking situation. How are you seeing it?
Yeah, so I think left back, I think just the obvious decision would probably just be pull Jordan Boss back to play as a left back. I think that's the obvious thing to give him some more reps there, to sort of prove himself to Arnie, like, hey, I can play as a left back. This is my position after all. But yeah, I think that will be the obvious decision there. But maybe a smoky for Jacob Farrell or whoever it is. But I'm not sure about that one because I think Farrell's sort of involved with the Ollie Roos. And then for Tete Yenge, I actually didn't really consider that one. And that's interesting because I probably would say no, not yet, because just how much competition there is right now. I think we're forgetting, alongside Taggart and Stamatolopoulos, we already have the existing strikers in the squad right now: Mitch Duke, Fornaroli, and Cassini-Enge, his brother. But yeah, I think I'll be another thing really to debate in terms of what does Arnie do, because obviously Duke's going to be, pushing his late 30s at that point. Well, Fornaroli the same as well. So those both of them are really getting on. So yeah, I guess preparation for the World Cup and the Asian Cup coming up, is maybe do you drop those guys and just go for the younger guys at this point, because obviously they don't know if they'll sort of be up for it at that point. So yeah, I don't know. I probably wouldn't have Tete Yenge in there now. I'd probably have both Stamatolopoulos and Taggart ahead of him. I just think they've been unbelievable, but he's really one to keep it on. He's done unbelievably well for Livingston. So yeah, but well, shout out to Tete Yenge, man. He's kind of come out of nowhere, but yeah, it's honestly just Scotland doing wonders for us, to be fair.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's fucking goes without saying. That yeah, no, I by the way, I'm not saying like he should be in the squad or anything. He's been in great form, and I just thought I'll just throw that
Yeah.
out there.
He should definitely be in the conversation. Like it should
Yeah,
be something talked about,
it's
yeah.
a great goal that he scored against Celtic in the Scottish. I mean,
Unbelievable.
that's at Celtic, big occasion like that to step up. So, no, credit to him. He's been in great form. So did you mention a left back option?
Oh yeah, well, I just do Jordan Boss there. I think just
Would
simply
you
just dropping him back.
put like a give like another left back like as in a second option that you just take in the squad?
Well, that's why I was sort of saying Farrell, but I know he's sort of involved with the Oli Roos, so I'm not 100% sure if he would get picked up. I'm trying to think of others. Morale, like, because that's all the thing. All the good left backs in the league right now are actually really young. Like Moragas, for example, he's with the Oli Roos as well. I don't know. Maybe a Joel King. Courtney Perkins, another one with the Oli
Joel
Roos.
King, what?
I'm not. I was just trying to think of like
Yeah,
decent
Jordan
backs in the league
Courtney
that are
Perkins.
Aussie.
No, I mean, you
No,
have to be
but
more
the thing is,
consistent,
he's with
probably.
the Oli Roos as well, though. So I don't
Yeah,
know.
yeah.
Maybe you go back for a Davidson. I know he's still
Yeah.
playing with Weapon in Belgium. I don't know. Callum Elder, Jack Ardo. I don't think he's ever been picked
Jack
up.
Iredell, yeah.
The one that with Bolton. That'll be interesting to see if Gethin Jones also gets another call up.
No,
I reckon
Gethin
we'll.
Jones comes back and but he plays the left back.
Oh, thank you. Yes, I really, really want to see that. Please, Arnie,
Gethin
please.
Jones around Montada.
But no, but I think of another one is like I'm thinking that sort of midfield role, like Josh Nisbet. I think this is the one where like, okay, does he get called up? Like I think we've had times before, like, okay, it'll be interesting, but this is the squad where like you have to call him up. If
I
he
think we
gets
have to
called
do a
up, it
separate
has to be this one.
podcast, just me and you talking about Nisbet and the Mariners,
Oh
just like a
man.
couple of hours,
It
just
would
how
be,
great it is.
just cheeky 4-hour podcast just yapping on about them. But yeah, I don't know. I'll be interesting. It's reminded me a lot of the Jake Bruma situation a couple seasons ago where, one of the best midfielders in the league, but just can't seem to find a way into that Socceroos midfield. So I don't know. I'm really hoping for Nisbet's sake he does get called up.
All right, Jake, top work. Thanks for joining me on the pod this morning. Anything you want to add before we go to a break?
No. Go, Joshy Nisbet, get called up, mate. That's all I've got to say.
All right, Jake's gonna go. We're gonna take a break, and on the other side, I've got Paletti, and we are talking about a couple of things to do with MacArthur, and also the situation with Canberra at the moment. So we will be back. Okay, I'm joined now by the freelance journalist for the Inner Sanctum, Paletti, and joining me to discuss a couple of things. First of all, with MacArthur, and most notably, a big injury to Bernardo, which was announced yesterday, which most people might think isn't maybe a massive deal, but I think it's quite interesting because it opens up a lot of possibilities for them in terms of their squad and what they can do with it. Also, I want to talk to you about Michelle Hayman's comments on Monday. And the article which came out in the Canberra Times about this whole Canberra situation, and what's going on with the expansion team in the men's side, and how it's actually affecting the women's side of things, and not many people have really been talking about it. And then now Michelle Hayman's come forward and kind of blasted the league about it, in kind of a, could you say, a typical Michelle Hayman fashion. She's definitely not afraid to speak her mind when it comes to the media. But yeah, we'll get to that. We'll get to that soon. I want to start with Bernardo being injured. First of all, before I do any of this. How are you going on this Wednesday morning? We are recording quite early.
Living the dream.
Living the dream.
I
Excellent.
don't know what dream that is, but I am living a dream.
Awesome. So Bernardo, he comes off against the Mariners, and post-match Sajovsky, kind of, yeah, didn't really say much about it. He kind of said, oh, we'll just kind of assess tomorrow, this, that, and the other. And then, yeah, we get the information yesterday. It's a ruptured Achilles, which is, yeah, just terrible news, for him, because he's been like probably one of the better, in-season transfers, yeah, across the board this season. And he's been fantastic. They kind of just plucked him from Adelaide. There was clearly, being here in Adelaide, there was clearly an issue where it came to game time with him, and he felt like he was probably underappreciated and unused, and said, okay, well, I'm gonna pack my bags and go join my mate Rafa, Borges Rodriguez and MacArthur, and go and start games for them and contribute for them. And he's been fantastic. My big surprise with him was how well suited he had been to this kind of transition style that Sajoski has been implementing in MacArthur, and how well that's been being used. But then now we have this with the ruptured Achilles, and it's just, you know, you go back to someone like Noel Botic missing the rest of the season. There's a few of these young guys who are just getting injuries at the really wrong time, when in terms of their development. And you know, last season he almost missed pretty much all of last season with a metatarsal fracture in Adelaide. And then I think that also kind of affected his game time when he came back, because when he came back, he was kind of suddenly, you know, fourth, fifth choice when it came to the wingers, because he just hadn't been playing. And then, you know, the perception from the coach kind of changes. So hopefully, maybe, you know, that doesn't happen here. And you'd expect with a ruptured Achilles, I mean, I'd, yeah, he'd be back next season. And in terms of who they've got, Danny De Silva came back on the weekend. You've got, even someone like Jake Holman has played on the left out wide sometimes this season. You've got, though, obviously Jed Drew, who will probably now just naturally take that starting spot on the left with Rafa on the right. But then also, the NPL team's doing pretty well to start the season, even though they are playing in the second division, in New South Wales. And Ariaf Piol has been scoring goals. We've seen him a little bit this season. Jesper Weber, who I've seen, we've seen before in the AFC Cup, if I'm not mistaken. And yeah, also they signed a couple of these academy boys to scholarship contracts on Monday. One of them is a winger, if I'm not mistaken, Oliver Randazzo, who I think, Paletti, you can correct me if I'm wrong, played for Sutherland in the NPL last year. And I think had a goal and assist, and yeah, was I've heard good things about him. Let's put it that way. And yeah, they've also got Matt Miller, who I think, from my understanding, is that he will be back at some point. So they've got options that can come in. But first of all, your thoughts, I guess, on the Bernardo injury, and then how they kind of go about replacing that.
I mean, just on Randazzo, I definitely commentated on a game he was in last season. So
Okay.
Sutherland is the most likely candidate
Yeah.
there.
Okay.
So that definitely sounds about right off the top of my head. In terms of Bernardo, right, like there's never a good spot on the pitch for a coach to have an injured player, but midfield might be the best place because they're just absolutely stacked in midfield. You rattled off a ton of names. Like, I mean, the other thing is that Bernardo's 8 games, 4 starts this year, only played 360 minutes in the league. So it's not like it's the biggest fix for Stojanovski to try and find someone for, you know, Ali Uggla, Lachie Rose. They've both come on and done a job there. Jed Drew's been there. You know, you mentioned Jesper Weber. I've been quite high on him for quite a long time. Just can't get that consistent game time. But you know, like there's definitely something that Mille sees in Bernardo. So I think next season's definitely gonna be a looking for him again, once he recovers from this injury. The other thing you've got to remember as well is that he's only 20 years old. So it's You know, it's not like this is a 30-year-old coming off a ruptured Achilles injury. This is 20-year-old, and I think you mentioned that we've seen this quite a bit this season. You know, and you mentioned Noah Bottich. I think this is just it's one of the problems within the league is that you've got young developing bodies, and because every team basically shares the ground with other tenants and concerts and what have you. Like if you look at you know when the West Tigers come to Campbelltown and they play on a harder pitch, they play on a sandier pitch than what football should be played on. And so you've got young developing bodies, you've got quick turning all on hard pitches. That's a recipe for disaster. Like we've seen some of the older players as well struggle with it. Sim De Jong, when he came to the league, just couldn't stay healthy for the life of him, and a part of that has to come down to you know the pitches that. You know, you're playing on their harder pitches, so it's a problem that's not going to go anywhere, unfortunately.
Yeah, no. And but you're right where you say, yeah, if they were going to have a long-term injury in any part of the pitch, like they've got a lot of wide depth. I actually completely missed Ali Uglow. That's a great point. He's a great little player. I've always been impressed by him when I watch him. But you're right. Like if Valerjaman goes down, you know, then you're really scrambling to kind of look for, and anyone who really would play as the nine is kind of makeshift. I know Lachie Rose is, I guess, more of a striker now, but has also been a winger. He's not maybe that more out and out option. But like the centre back depth probably isn't the best with them. I think even like Ollie Jones, who's a young centre back, didn't he get sent off the other week or something in the NPL I saw? Not in the NPL, with the academy side. So yeah, like point is like wing depth is probably where they're most sorted. Could you see Danny De Silva actually making some sort of impact on their final sort of stretch heading into finals?
Are we going to get the Danny De Silva of old, or are we going to get the Danny De Silva who's been in and out of the lineup with injuries and the like? I think is going to be the question. I mean, yeah, I hate to use the cliche, that's a question for the coach sort of answer, but I think it's where does Milo Chernovsky see Danny De Silva in his lineup? Is that in a starting role, or is that in an off the bench 15, 20 minutes, come on, tight defenses? Sort of vibes. So if it's the latter, absolutely he can make an impact on some tired defenses. But you know, if we're getting into finals, and I don't think anyone is going to question whether or not MacArthur's playing finals at this point with only a few weeks to go in the season. You know, if you've got Danny De Silva like 6 games in the league, one start, 140 odd minutes, good for 20, 30 minutes off the bench, but like if you're tired at the end of regulation and you're bringing him on in the 70th minute, how's he going to go, you know, into extra time and the like? And we saw during the Mariners, the cup game against the Mariners, went to extra time, and we saw Miele bring off one of the players that he'd already substituted on, you know, in that exact same scenario. So it's an interesting dilemma that Danny De Silva poses for Stroyowski.
Yeah, I think that was Ariathpiel, I think, in that game.
Yes,
From
that does sound about right. Yes.
And gee, if Ariathpiel gets more starts, then I won't hear the end of it from our mutual friend Antonis Pagonis. So
What is it, the SA Great campaign he's still on?
Have you I saw you've been joining that campaign every now and then of late. I'm actually I suffer from SA Great fatigue, so he'll probably like message me when he hears this. All right. Actually, one last MacArthur thing before we move on to Canberra. Obviously we saw the Oli Roos squad announced for the West Asian Football Federation Championship. Boy, is that a mouthful. Now Rafa Borges Rodriguez, someone mentioned this to me and I didn't really think about it. And when I looked at the squad, I didn't really think it was a massive thing either. Do you think maybe he was hard done by maybe not being selected for this squad? Because then I went through it and I mean you got Lockie Brook, you got Milanovic, you got Adrian Segicic, Volupola I still think is maybe slightly ahead of him at this point. So any thoughts there?
I don't think he's hard done by in any stretch of the situation. I think this is a squad where, if you look at what Tony Bidmar's done, he's so overloaded with talent. Like, it's almost hard to be like, okay, sure, you look at this squad, who do you leave out to bring in Rafa, right? It's almost like there are people going on about, why hasn't Aaron Kunda been selected? And it's like, well, who do you leave out for Aaron Kunda? It's one of those things where it's not so much a case of who's missed out as to who do you leave out to bring those players in. And I think this is one of the, it's been one of the problems with a lot of squad selection for a while. It's okay, are they hard done by? No, because it's who do you leave out? We saw this with I want to say I had a similar discussion around one of the Matildas squad selections last year, and it's like, okay, it's who do you leave out to bring this player in? And the answer is, well, you can't leave this person out, that person out, and then you slowly get down the list, and it's like, oh, there's actually no room for them in the squad, and it's not anything that Rafa's done bad. As I said, I think it's just, and I apologize for the rambling, it's who do you leave out? And the answer is, I don't know who.
Well, you mentioned the Matildas there, and that kind of, yeah, I'm going to kind of use that to segue, I guess, to the Canberra discussion, because one Matilda's come out, Canberra United's biggest star by far, and Mitchell Hayman, so comes out and has essentially, I looked at it as almost like an ultimatum, right, to the APL, was to kind of say like, give us more information, and by us, the players at Canberra, about what's going on with the men's team. Is that going to be, coinciding with the women's team? How's this all going to work? Otherwise, we're going to basically walk away from the club and take offers elsewhere. I mean, there's no doubt Michelle Heyman would constantly have, I guess, probably overseas interest, maybe even other clubs here in Australia, just inquiring and seeing if she'd be interested. But also, like Vesna Milivojevic, like there's plenty of players in that squad who are probably being monitored, and dare I say, by clubs overseas. So this, I think, it's interesting, right? Because this whole Canberra thing, Auckland is obviously been a lot been progressed at a lot quicker rate than the Canberra expansion side, and at this rate, like, I'm very much questioning whether, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure that it's the expectation is Canberra will be ready for next season, right?
That is the expectation. That's the line we've been told for what feels like a year now. Like, and I said this on the A-Leagues of Our Own podcast last night, which dropped this morning, was this has been a it feels like it's been 2 weeks away for over a year now. Like, I recall, having moved to Tasmania around this time last year, and listening to a podcast of some description, I don't remember which one. I remember, hearing them talking about it. It's like, we've got owners interested. We're a couple of weeks away. There was talk of them bringing back the Canberra Cosmos, sort of name and branding and style. And then ever since, it just feels like any time the discussion comes up, it's 2 weeks away. It's a couple of weeks away. It's almost there. Like, Nick Garcia was an ABC grandstand a couple of weeks ago. It was about a month ago, and said, oh, it's a couple of weeks away. Well, that was a month ago. And then was asked about it again recently. It's like, oh, it's a couple of weeks away. It's almost done. And, that was 2 weeks ago, and we're here now, and we're still having these discussions. And, like, it's good on Michelle Heyman for using her voice and using her platform to speak out. I think a problem, because if you look at every single, isn't have, we have to look at this through the lens of what has the A-Leagues done previously, not just with the APL, but with Football Australia. It's every time there's been an expansion into the dub competition, it's right, here's your men's team that's already established. Take the badge, take the colours, take the identity, and shift it over to the women's team. And it's why a lot of people seem to think there's this massive rivalry, between, like the original rivalry exists in the dub as well. And it's like, the two sides don't really have a history with each other when you look at it like that. Like, it's just been transplanted from the men's in.
Yeah.
That's why, like if you look at Sydney FC, like, Victory are definitely their biggest rivals, and that mirrors the men's competition. But, like, there's not really that passionate like Sydney Derby rivalry outside of the colours there, because like the Wanderers have never really performed well against Sydney FC. It's almost like at a point you feel sorry for the Wanderers that they can't compete with their biggest rivals in quotation marks. So things don't always translate well, but that's been the history of Dub expansion. And whereas this time, essentially all the APL need to do is reverse the roles. It's like, right, here's this existing women's license with its branding, its identity, its culture, its inbuilt fan base, and put a men's team onto it. And that's essentially what it should be. And the fact that we're still having this discussion a year later, we're what, 6 months out from the start of next season, 7 months out. This is a side where if you're essentially setting them up to fail if this wasn't done yesterday. And we saw that with the Wellington Phoenix women when they came into the competition on like a month's notice during the middle of a pandemic and had to play at a Wollongong. They had some signings, but essentially they were almost being set up to fail in a weird way. And that's, they've started to turn things around a little bit, but they've fallen off again this season. And I think if you ask any, Dub supporters, it's a case of when it's going to happen for the Phoenix, and it will happen. It's just they didn't have the easiest transition in. And we've had in the men's competition the history of failed expansion, right? Gold Coast United, North Queensland Fury. There's another team that I'm forgetting, I
New
think.
Zealand Knights.
Yes. Which, yep, that's the one I'm like, where they've only lasted, a couple of seasons. And, if this Canberra side comes in and doesn't get some sort of result straight away or show some kind of promises, is this a case where a men's team's going to fail, or whether it's propped up or whatever? But like, is there a chance we're, see history starting to repeat itself again? And with that will disappear Daly women's side, Canberra United, who, were a friend, and not a franchise, were an original team in the Dub when the competition existed. They're a foundation club. That's what I was looking for. And essentially become collateral damage to a failed men's side. And I think that presents a big problem. We're talking on the A-League's Our Own podcast last night. I had Emma Burke, who basically said, like, why should women, and I'm paraphrasing here because I don't remember her exact quote, but, why should women be responsible for the failings of men again? And I think that's a very fitting way to look at it, because this is kind of what needs to change, is changing the thinking. Like the APL have had essentially an open wide net to shoot at time and time again with this over the last year, and it seems like every time they just keep skying it over the bar. And it's almost like a Groundhog Day. It's okay, when is this going to change? And I hope it does soon, because I want to see Canberra United, flourish in the Dub competition. I also want to see them, flourish in the men's competition. I've long been of the belief that we needed a team in Canberra, and that's where the last round of expansion should have gone, is into Canberra on the men's side of things. That's not to say I don't love having MacArthur on my doorstep. I absolutely love it. 5 minutes from the ground, I absolutely love it. But it's one of those things where if it fails, it's going to be an indictment on the league, and I think they'll lose a lot of fans, especially from a growing women's competition that can't afford to fail. Like, it's almost like for some people, it'll be the straw that breaks the camel's back, essentially.
Yeah, and like, so the Canberra men's team, if all goes to plan and that comes in, like you're right, like it could just be comes in and the first season's a disaster, and you're already behind the eight ball. But also, like then you'd be wasting the opportunity. Like I think I agree with you. I think Canberra's actually got not only does I think it's got some talent that could be unearthed with a professional team on the men's side of things. But also I think it's the type of place that I think would get behind a football team. You got like the Brumbies, you've got like the Canberra Raiders on the NRL side of things. But I think football's pretty popular there, right? I know like kind of at a grassroots level as well. And to potentially waste that would be, very, very disappointing. And the other thing, though, the other thing I'd say is we've had situations though with the APL where they've like jumped the gun on things they're announcing. So it's like we go back to like Perth, for example, and the first time that they were supposedly, had new owners and, basically it was rushed and announced before the due diligence had essentially been done. So, in saying that, like you look at Auckland at the moment and from understanding, reading reports and stuff, there's a few players who've been signed. They've obviously got their manager in place. They've got a director of football. So, and of course they've got an owner and all that sort of stuff. Really, we're just waiting for a name at this point. But even I saw Terry McFlynn, who's going to be a director of football, I think in it was in Stuff, the New Zealand publication recently, and he was even saying when he was asked about signings and stuff, like, we're working overtime essentially to, make sure we're ready and stuff like that. But that's a team who's kind of already got their coach, director of football, and they're already, and even he's saying they're working overtime, right? But at this point, don't know the coach, don't know, who the owner is. I know we've heard Michael Caggiano is, potentially the guy who's kind of behind the bid and stuff, but there's just a lot of no information, right? And yeah, it'd be very frustrating. Like at this point, for Canberra United as well, there's another couple of things where like you don't want to lose for Canberra United women's team. You don't want to lose Michelle Heyman, obviously, right? That's for
Well,
two reasons.
we've already seen Michelle Heyman leave Canberra once already. She won't be afraid to do it again, and that would be a huge blow for Canberra United. Like this season, she's been their leading goal scorer, and the side's coming last on the ladder, in part because of the APL's decision to change the tiebreaker. And I've gone on ad nauseum about that, but it has to be noted that the only reason they are in last at the time of recording is because of the APL's tiebreaker. They've got like I think it's like a minus five goal differential, whereas if you look at Adelaide United, it's like minus 20, right? Like it's insane that this is the side that's sitting in last because they've got one less win.
But I was going to say, like, for two reasons, because obviously you would lose a great player, Michelle Heyman, of course, and your leading striker. But also, think about it, if you're thinking about, running the men's team, like it's just such an easy marketing tool to have, hey, here's the Matilda who just scored four goals in their most recent game, in our women's team, and then, you can come watch them and you can come watch our men's team, and it's just an easy marketing tool like that. And also, just on that kind of Matildas aspect of it, not a good look for the league when a Matilda comes out who pretty much everyone would know now, and basically, gives you a ultimatum publicly. Like it's not good, right? So there's kind of a PR element to this as well, which isn't looking great at the moment.
No, it's not. And I imagine that would have caught a lot of people by surprise at the A-Leagues. When that interview came out, I know it took all of us off of Twitter by surprise. So yeah, it's not a good look. And part of me wants to think at this point that the reason we haven't heard anything on Canberra is because they're waiting until the Socceroos game now to make the announcement. They'll do a big thing in Canberra. You've got national press traveling in because it's the Socceroos in Canberra. For those that whose employers still allow them to travel to these sorts of things, as opposed to covering off the couch. But that could just be an out there conspiracy theory that I've just created in my head. But like it would make sense that that's the time to do it when you've got this national media in Canberra for it. But I mean, something has to, like I said, something has to be done yesterday, essentially. Otherwise, you're setting a side up to fail. And that we've seen the history of the A-Leagues. We can't afford any more failed sides.
No, we can't. You're right. And the only thing I'll ask you is, because I'm not too sure myself, what's do Capital Football have any sort of role here in what's going on? Is there any sort of like what responsibilities do they have, if any, to kind of to the Canberra players?
So, Capital Football, for those who don't know, are the ones that currently run the A-League Women's side, Canberra United. I believe that that ends at the end of the season, which is why, it's basically the license that Canberra United, the Capital Football has, is going to transfer over to the new ownership, which is why this is such a debate and why this is such an issue. It's not like there's going to be two separate clubs, two separate owners, that sort of thing. And you've got Capital Football that have, because they have to basically do the role of Football New South Wales, just run an entire competition, this, it's state federation, run the entire, grassroots, everything like that. But then they've also got this A-League women's side to run. And so I'm not going to pretend like I know the inner workings down at Capital Football, but I can't imagine it's having, all these dedicated resources going to it that other teams might have because they're run by private ownership essentially. And so that's like I imagine there'll be some kind of handover or exchange period where it's like, hey, this is what we've done, this is why we've done it this way to new owners. But I obviously can't speak to that with any sort of certainty. Overall, I think their role will be pretty minimal. It wouldn't surprise me if they have some sort of relationship with the new owners of this Canberra men's side when they come in and, and they take over the women's license, where it's like, hey, essentially a friendly exchanging of information sort of thing. That would be my best guess, but I obviously can't speak to that in full.
Yeah, definitely. Paletti, top stuff. Anything you want to plug before we finish?
You can follow me on Twitter at it's Poletti, ITSPOLETTI. You can check out most of my written work at theinnersanctum.com.au, and you can hear me talk dub on the A-Leagues of our own podcast. And if as one of the many wonderful joys of being a freelancer is the lack of consistent income, so if you want to send a donation my way, you can do so. There's links in my link tree to do so, which you can find on my Twitter. Yeah, that's really all I want to plug.
Top stuff. One of the good guys in Australian football media, and go and show some support big time. Like you've mentioned, because you're right. It's not easy. It is not easy at all. All right, good stuff. This has been another episode of the Front Page Football Podcast. Thanks to Jake from earlier and Paletti. Thanks again.
No worries, thank you.
And that'll do. I'll be back on Friday with another podcast. Until next time, it's bye for now.